Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, November 5th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Glad to have you with me today. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly.
I'm glad you're with us and super gung-ho about it. Actually, Andrew, I want to start with you, and you've spent a little bit of time with Photoshop on iPad, and I would like to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, so granted, so far I've only spent about a half an hour with it, but in a couple of weeks or so, I'll be playing with it more and do a review of it. Now, basically, the biggest thing people have been a little upset about is that at DubDub, I think is when they mentioned this, they said full Photoshop is coming to the iPad. Mm-hmm. Well, full Photoshop doesn't actually mean every tool from the desktop app will port over. I guess it just means they use the same code base.
Okay.
So using it for a half an hour, it seems decent. Like, it has all the basic stuff there, like retouching, compositing. You can work with layers. It also supports PSD files. So I would put it on the level of Pixelmator for iOS.
Okay.
But in my opinion, other Photoshop alternatives, like I use Affinity Photo. Mm-hmm. I think that's better than this app so far. But I think it's a good start.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I kind of saw about this actually came from a friend of mine, Aaron Hockley. Hi, Aaron. Who runs a website for photographers, like the intersection of technology and photography. And one of the things that he had noticed about it was that it doesn't really act like Lightroom is a thing that people use, at least on iOS right now.
Yeah, so I noticed that too.
There's not a lot of integration or anything. So for a lot of people who have sort of bought into that subscription, because in order to get this, you have to have a Creative Cloud subscription, correct?
Yes, although you do get a free 30-day trial.
Okay. So if you want to try it out, you can see, but you have to have a full Creative Cloud subscription in order to use it on iOS, like, beyond that time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was one of the things that he noticed, was if you are somebody who's bought into Adobe system and Adobe subscription, that if you want to do any of this stuff on your iPad, that it will work, but the workflow that you may want to take with you is not very portable yet because of the lack of Lightroom integration. So that's the thing I wanted to make sure and tell people about. Yeah, I found that in Aaron's newsletter last night. So that was part of why I wanted to talk about it today, because that was the thing I wanted to ask you about. Because for people who are super interested in doing this, their workflow may not be great, right?
Yeah. I haven't noticed any like actual image editing, like altering the color, for example, in this app, at least not that I've noticed. Maybe it's somewhere in there. So you can do whatever you need to do in this app, and then you'll have to export it to Lightroom or another app.
Okay. So, yeah. So at least for now, for people who are still waiting for full Photoshop on the iPad, they're still waiting.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how it sounds.
yep.
Okay. So, but at least it's there now for people who want to try it out. You can check it out, see what you think. And as far as like usability and the way it's laid out, because if you don't have the largest iPad, then you're not going to have as much screen as you would even if you were just on your laptop. So how does it feel to use it on an iPad size screen?
I mean, the UI is good for tablets. You know, the buttons are a bit bigger. It's not the exact same setup as a desktop app, but I guess that's kind of good because this is a different type of device. Mm-hmm. What I was impressed by is all of the range of iPads that they do support. They support it going all the way back to the iPad Air 2.
Oh, wow.
Whereas an app like Affinity Photo, it only supports like the latest four, maybe, iPads because it needs that extra power.
Yeah.
So I would say that is a plus for this one.
Okay. And Brian, have you spent any time with this yet?
Zero time. I've had no time to even think about it.
Okay.
So, so I was really, really looking forward to Andrew's report.
Yeah, I as a general rule, I don't generally spend a lot of time in Photoshop. So for me, it's more as a spectator. Like, this is a tool that I know a lot of people who spend a lot of time using it. And it was really exciting news to hear that it was going to come to iOS. So that's part of why I was extra interested when it finally dropped to see what we could find out about it. I'm glad to hear the interface is not the same. Because the device is not the same, as you said. And that was one of the things that sort of worried me.
So they're not surfacing it.
Right.
They're not Windows tinning it.
Yeah.
Right.
That's good.
And that means somebody stopped and thought about it. And that makes me really happy. Even if it's still not the best experience. Like, it's better than just giving me the desktop version and expecting me to work it out. Right. That's worse.
At the same time, though, I mean, like, people who spend their lives in Photoshop, their professional lives, probably, you know, having to learn a second interface, that is kind of, I mean, that transition that you're talking about, like, how much time, Kelly, do you spend in Photoshop on the Mac?
Very little.
Yeah, okay. I spend a lot of time in Photoshop on the Mac.
Okay.
And, you know, if the interface is too different, even if it's better, that is another interface I have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
True.
And so I think it's probably going to. I think people's opinions on this app, says the guy who hasn't used it yet, is really going to depend kind of on how they use Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
Right. People who are probably doing a lot more image creation than just simple photo manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, may find that working with Photoshop on an iPad with an Apple Pencil is much better, whereas someone doing simple kinds of manipulation using macros, using batch commands, call them macros, but using batch automation and things like that, those things may well end up working better on a desktop.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, I mean, Photoshop does have enough uses. It's a big enough application that there are plenty of different use case scenarios, and it may well depend upon your specific use case scenario as to what you think about a Photoshop on iPad.
Sure. Now, Andrew, is it dramatically different, or is it just sort of the interface set up a little differently because you're not using a mouse and a keyboard?
No, not dramatically different. I would say maybe it's just a bit more simplified. Okay. Like, on the left side of the screen is where you'll find all the tools. On the right side of the screen is where you find all of your layers.
Okay. So that's what I remember about Photoshop now. What little bit I remember of spending time in it is, like, yeah, you kind of pick all your tools from the left-hand side, and then all the layers and things are on the right. So that makes sense. I'm glad to hear it. And hopefully, like, as it evolves and grows, then it'll just end up being more useful for people. When they announced it, the thing that I was wondering about was if I understand that Photoshop is far and away the most popular thing that Adobe makes, but I wonder, like, as an application, and I wondered what that meant for the rest of Creative Suite on iOS. Like, are they just dipping in a toe with Photoshop, or is that the only thing they ever intend to make, or will Illustrator end up there as well someday? Things like that.
So. Actually, yes. They did announce that Illustrator will be coming next year, I think.
Oh. Yeah. All right.
Illustrator with Apple Pencil should be awesome.
That would make a lot of sense to me. But yeah, I mean, Adobe is not known for their logic as a company. That's not what they're known for. So that's why I was wondering. Interesting. Thanks, Andrew. And Brian, I know you do spend a lot of time in Photoshop on your computer, so I'm interested to hear your take on this. Once it becomes once you get an opportunity to spend a little time with it, I'm looking forward to see what you have to say. And now, Brian, I want to talk to you in particular about plans that also sort of affect you, not just because you are talking about the report, but also because this is where you live, too.
Well, yes, it will affect me. So what we're talking about is Apple's new real estate venture, really. Mm-hmm. Is what it is, and it'll affect me because I live in the geographic locale where Apple is doing this. So this Apple announced this yesterday. There, it's a $2.5 billion fund being divided up in different ways to affect affordable housing in the Bay Area.
Okay.
And so what is it? It's $1 billion for an affordable housing investment fund, $1 billion for first time home buyer mortgage assistance. That will also be a fund. Apple is ponying up $300 million worth of Silicon Valley land for affordable housing, which is really interesting to me. And it will contribute, and this was Charlotte wrote this up for us yesterday. It will contribute, Apple will contribute $150 million to a Bay Area housing fund, and then $50 million to Destinations, which is a nonprofit that is trying to improve the homelessness situation in Silicon Valley.
Excellent.
Yeah, it is probably excellent. And I got to jump straight to Bernie Sanders' criticism, which Andrew wrote up. Andrew, do you want to, like, because I want to jump straight to that.
Yeah. So basically what Bernie said in part was Apple's announcement that it is entering this business is an effort to distract from the fact that it has helped create California's housing crisis, blah, 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 blah. My issue with that is he didn't really say why, other than the fact that they're a tech company and all of their high paying jobs has maybe helped raise costs.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's getting at. And it's completely irrational. Like, well, Apple helped create this by making a lot of people wealthier.
Mm-hmm. But there's a lot. Is it bad that if Apple helped create it, they're realizing that and kind of want to do something to help mitigate that a little bit? Like, well, that's the thing I'm sort of like confused by, is I don't understand why that's what's upsetting him. Like, does it really matter what their motivations are? Like, if they're doing this and it's going to make life better for people, does it matter why?
The notion that the notion that Apple is committed a sin by making people wealthier by being one of the big tech companies that has concentrated wealth in this area, that is a profoundly problematic starting point for criticizing it. And the reality is that the tech companies have all contributed to this issue, and it's been going back for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. It has certainly been accelerated under the current big tech boom.
Sure.
But the if you take Bernie Sanders, if you cut to the core of what Bernie Sanders is saying, he's saying that no one should ever be able to be wealthy. And there are certainly people who believe that. I am not one of those people. Mm-hmm. And I believe there are problems with gentrification. There are problems when ordinary folks are being priced out of a market, and there are repercussions from that, and there are problems with that.
Yes.
But you cannot, in my opinion, logically or realistically attacking it by saying that no one should be able to be wealthy. Mm-hmm. That is a problematic approach.
I think part of what this, and Brian, maybe this will sound a little familiar to you. Part of what this reminds me of, like the thing that I was, when I was reading this and sort of considering it, is it reminds me of how Greenpeace used to call Apple out all the time for all the stuff that they would do. Like Apple would come out with a report about like, here's what we're doing to be less environmentally impactful. And then Greenpeace would howl about it because it wasn't good enough. And yet Apple was doing anything and nobody else was releasing reports like that. And
yeah, and the same,
but
same
it's convenient to yell at Apple for not doing enough when there are so many other companies that aren't doing anything at all. Like, are we going to see this kind of investment from Google in the Bay Area? Because
Google's already announced some stuff, and so is Facebook. Apple is actually late to this party.
Okay, well then, good. And call them out for being the late for being late to the party, but don't call them out for like trying to help.
The same thing is true with various Labor Watch organizations that have heavily criticized Apple for labor conditions in China when Apple's labor conditions in China beat everybody else's labor conditions in China.
Mm-hmm. And let me point out, I'm not saying don't call Apple out when Apple doesn't do what you're thinking Apple needs to be doing. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying never criticize them. I do not look forward to your letters in this case. But it feels like if he's going to be mad at Apple for doing it, then what he should be mad about is their timing, because if this is already happening from other companies, then, like, you know, why is Apple late to the party? Why weren't they the first with this? So
yeah,
I could see that being fair criticism.
That's a lame criticism because it hasn't really been that long. And also, don't think that necessarily Apple is doing all of this out of the goodness and charity of its own heart. Most of these funds that they've announced are essentially businesses.
Okay.
Right? An affordable housing investment fund,
mm-hmm.
a first-time home buyer mortgage assistance fund. I mean, these are funds that could end up turning a profit. And I don't think we know yet how Apple is structuring them.
Right.
But this, you know, this is partly Apple putting its money to work.
Mm-hmm.
I know of at least one of my friends who was immediately hoping that Apple would be sued for breach of fiduciary responsibility. But these are investments, and I think that's probably a legitimate use of its money, especially if those investments can turn a profit and can actually help address some of the affordable housing issues that the Bay Area does face.
Yeah. Like, I kind of don't see the problem with this. This is sort of like, again, like I'm just sort of confused why there would be criticism of it for existing, which is what Bernie's doing. Sort of shame on you, Apple, for doing this, because I don't remember him saying anything about Google or Facebook when they announced these similar initiatives. So,
well, he may have, though. Have you researched that?
I have not. I said I don't remember. Okay. I didn't say he didn't say. I just don't recall hearing anything about Bernie releasing a statement about, you know, criticizing Facebook or criticizing Google. So
doesn't necessarily mean he didn't do it.
Right.
Then let's make that clear. Right. So the other thing is this: if Apple can have an effect, and if Google and Facebook can have an effect, and you know, Facebook is a company I want to see put out of business, and Google is a company I want to see reined in strongly. But if these investments or donations or contributions or efforts by these corporate giants can affect the affordable housing issue in the Bay Area, that helps Apple, it helps Facebook, and it helps Google. For one thing, these companies have employees who aren't making, you know, $250,000 a year. And those folks do need some place to live. And they, like, you know, there are people who are, you know, the cleaning staff and the contractors that are, for a variety of reasons, aren't paid these huge amounts of money. And then, of course, there are the teachers who teach their employees' kids.
Mm-hmm.
There are the firemen who are keeping Silicon Valley from burning down.
Mm-hmm.
There are police officers. There are road crews. There, you know, all of the folks who make a normal society work, even an affluent society,
mm-hmm.
need to be able to live in that area. Right. And if Apple and Facebook and Google can make that better, it helps those companies.
Right.
Right. So this is, again, this isn't necessarily something they're doing out of the goodness of their heart. It Apple could end up making some amount of profit directly from this. And even if it doesn't, if it can affect this, it is something that makes their own company better. And that's a good thing.
Right. And it makes the lives better of all of the people who work there. And, you know, like when you, if you work in an office, stop and think about the job that you do in that office or the company that you work for, and then think about all the people who are employed as a result of that company being there. Like you were saying, Brian, the cleaning staff, or the people who take care of landscaping, or the people who in the ground level of the building run the mini mart or the, you know, quick service restaurant or deli or whatever, you know, like all of those people all need a place to live. And, you know, maybe not have a 2-hour commute would be nice, you know, that sort of thing. So, like, I hope that these initiatives really take off. I hope it's something that turns out to be really awesome as a person who lives in a place where lots of people are being priced out of the parts they need to live in. I'm very curious to see how this goes in the Bay Area, because I would like to know. I have a vested interest in finding out what kind of change these companies can affect by focusing their efforts and trying to do something to mitigate what they see as problems in the area where they're located. So
there's another thing about Bernie Sanders's complaint that chaps my hide, and that he talks about Apple paying its fair share, and without ever mentioning that Apple is the largest taxpayer in the United States.
Yeah.
And without acknowledging what Tim Cook has said, which is, we follow the law. If you want us to behave differently, change the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that when folks usually on the left who are complaining about Apple and taxation and corporate taxes, mm-hmm. in particular, they always leave out those two things. That one, that Apple, regardless of whether or not it's paying enough in taxes, is the largest taxpayer in the United States.
Yeah.
And that Apple very assiduously follows the law. I mean, the right. problem is with the tax code. It's not with Apple's behavior. And yet folks who want to attack big tech in taxes in particular, big corporate taxes in particular, with Apple as the sort of poster child of that, they always leave that out, and that chaps my hide because it's illogical.
Right.
It's not the complete picture, and that really is strongly annoys me.
Yeah, there needs to be some context around that, I think. Yeah. The way that people will put context around, you know, Facebook has to pay this fine, and, you know, it sounds like a lot of money, but it's 8 minutes of paying Mark Zuckerberg for his job, you know, or whatever, like when people, you know, make those kind of calculations, so that you can tell, like, but on that scale, it's not a whole lot of money, right? If people want to be mad about it, then what they need to say is Apple is only paying taxes on 3% of what they make. If that's, you know, I don't know the math. I'm not sure what's going on there. But, you know, if what they're mad about is the percentage, then be mad about the percentage. But don't be mad that you think that Apple isn't paying as much tax as you think they should. It's not like they're shady about it. So I'm with you on that 100%. Brian looks forward to your letters, by the way, and if you have those, you can send them.
You know, in my career, I've been accused of being a conservative, a liberal, a communist, a capitalist, a corporatist, an environmentalist, an anarchist. I have been accused of being all of the things, I think, by my, usually not by readers. It's by drive-by readers. maybe drive-by listeners. So anyway, yeah. Shoot me your letters.
So Brian looks forward to your letters. but also, if there are things about Photoshop, if you've tried it, or if you're really holding out for Illustrator, we want to hear about that too. So you can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can talk to us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. I want to thank both of you for being here today. This was a very interesting conversation, and I'm looking forward to seeing how both topics evolve over time. Andrew, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you so much for coming by.
Yep, thanks for having us. Good times.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.